Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established, mid-career, debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. This episode of Conversations with Friends is with Damien Robb and Gabrielle Bergmoser. Damien Robb writes words for screen and paper. In 2014, he completed a master's in screenwriting at the Victorian College of the Arts and has since worked for a number of production companies to develop stories and ideas. He has been published in the horror anthology Seasons of Fire and the August 2019 edition of The Right Launch. His pilot script, Trench, was shortlisted for the John Hyde Science Fiction Writing Award, and he was also shortlisted for the Lord Mayor's Creative Writing Awards for his novella, The Case of Henry and the Hamster. In addition to that, he teaches creative writing workshops in schools around Australia with the Gateways program and runs programs for children and adults at Melbourne Young Writers Studio. He's also been co-host of a number of podcasts, including Movie Maintenance, Scaredy Boys and Imposter Syndrome.
Gabrielle Bergmoser is a Melbourne-based author and playwright. He won the prestigious Sir Peter Ustinov Television Scriptwriting Award in 2015 and was nominated for the 2017 Kenneth Branagh Award for New Drama Writing. In 2016, his first young adult novel, Boone Shepherd, was shortlisted for the Reading's Young Adult Prize. His first adult novel, The Hunted, will be published on July 31st, 2020 by HarperCollins and in the UK by Faber, with the sequel scheduled for 2021. A film adaptation is currently being developed in a joint production between Stampede Ventures and Vertigo Entertainment in LA, with Gabrielle writing the screenplay. Gabrielle also signed a second two-book deal with HarperCollins for his YA coming-of-age novel, Nelson and the Gallagher. I feel like these guys are just too successful, really. As I'm reading through that,
nice,
I'm like...
Listening to Gabe talk about that success, so he had won an award fairly early on in his career for a screenplay, and that feeling of you've made it.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, here on in... Robert Lukens would put it, the rest is gravy.
Yeah. The rest is gravy. And, you know, this was exactly the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about as well, because while, you know, I haven't had the LA movie studio experience quite yet, I do really relate to that idea. You know, I'm set now. This is it. I'm set. Catherine, did you have a moment?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Where you felt set, where you thought this is it.
Totally. Well, the helpline, when it was selling overseas and all of that, that's totally that moment. Absolutely, utterly surreal. And I think, I mean, you get so many compliments and things throughout that process, but you kind of feel like seen, or that people are going to just flock to me. Like, this is going to be... It's not going to stop. This is a transition, and it's a humbling and necessary process.
It is so humbling and so necessary. But, you know, I think it's also – I was thinking about it because there's a certain amount of it that you have to ride as well with confidence and believe that you are set to take the necessary next steps.
Totally.
You know, like you have to go through that high of thinking – mate, like every other book deal is just going to roll on. Like the publisher's just going to be waiting for me, sending boxes of chocolates until I, you know, every time that I send them any kind of dribble of draft. And that just doesn't happen, obviously, as all our listeners know from listening to particularly my story. So I think it's, yeah, that was just great. I loved
that. Can you also acknowledge there are wins? So it's sort of... It is both. Like, it doesn't quite, you know, doesn't quite have the lift off that you imagine, but there is lift.
there's definite lift. And but what I love too is that certainly, and this might be the same for you second time around, and certainly what these guys were saying too is that after that first time of thinking, oh, this is it, I'm set, you don't ever really fall for the fallacy in quite the same way again. You allow yourself to be built up again, and you allow yourself to enjoy, you know, all the lovely things people say, but you never think, okay, this is it. You always know now that it could all just fall away beneath my feet and I should just keep, you know, my VIT kind of card registered in case I just go back to the classroom. Not at the moment, though, obviously, because now, teachers are doing such a good job. Carry on.
Study. Kate, worthwhile pursuit, don't even bother. What side of the fence are you on? I think I know anyway. But
I'm in the worthwhile pursuit side of the fence, you know, for obvious reasons, because I'm addicted to it and I love it. I thought it was really interesting, though, what these two were saying about, you know, kind of the readings and the experience that they were having, you know, that they were kind of getting this particular form of the art shoved down their throats. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in lots of ways, I think that's useful as well, because then you rebel against that. And, you know, so, I think it's useful. What about you?
I think it's useful as well. I think there's a big difference between university study and TAFE study. And I think that TAFE study really has it over uni study for creative writing. Yeah. I don't know about the other creative pursuits, but that workshopping process is super, super helpful.
And certainly from my experience, our experience with RMIT and the professional writing there, you know, that's so industry focused. So I could not relate to that idea that they were talking about, that there was no sense of industry, because, you know, that's absolutely the bread and butter of that, of the RMIT course.
The other point I had about that idea of putting stuff out before it's ready. I have that in two minds. I think it's really important to keep putting stuff out there, but I think sometimes you put stuff out there and that's how you learn it's not ready as well.
Yeah. And, you know, for people listening who are interested in Varuna, you've got until July 29th, I think, to get your Varuna residency applications in for next year. And Catherine, I was totally looking at it. I was like, yep, sure, I can get that many words for the new project. And then I remembered saying to myself, you are not going to do it with the next book. Do not put out words and ideas and go for residencies too early this time, because even that process of going for them and the kind of stuff you've got to write about and getting the feedback, whether you're successful or not, can be really crushing. And I know that's really, really early, but it was a good reminder to myself. I had to kind of say, no, Kate, you said you weren't going to do it this time. It's too early. So yeah, I'm same as you. I thought the stuff about the podcast, their podcast, and having an audience. And, you know, I think that I've really felt that for us too, that you feel like you're building a conversation with people, and that's so good for your general career and also for what you learn, but also about the relationships that you forge through that and how important it is. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I do think it's, if you can work a situation so that you're the one to many, that's a pretty good thing to be able to do. And people have done it through podcasts, they've done it through blogs. There's lots of different approaches people have taken for that, but it's a good situation to work yourself into.
And that the final idea, that kind of, they both talk about talent, they both talk about luck, and it seems like, listening to the trajectories of what's happened so far, they've had a bit of both in their experience. But that idea that in the end it is persistence. You got to keep turning up. You got to put your bum in the seat. You got to, you know, send your stuff out, and you got to keep doing it
forever.
Forever.
Hi guys, my name's Gabe Bergmoser. I want to say a massive thank you to Kate and Catherine for having us on the First Time Podcast Conversations with Friends series. And today I am joined by my friends,
Damien Robb. Hello everyone.
So we thought, we're both writers, and we met a few years ago at VCA. We studied the Masters of Screenwriting there, and we figured that we would center our conversation around breaking into the industry and sort of exploring how do you do it, what are some of the paths you can take, what are the perils and pitfalls along the way. Because I don't know about you, Damo, but I definitely felt that around the time that we wrapped our masters, there really weren't very many like clear inroads that were available to us.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. Like, even from the course we did, a Masters of Screenwriting, with, as Gabe said, at the Victorian College of the Arts, And even leaving there, I kind of remember sort of talking to a few of our lecturers and just sort of trying to get a sense of, okay, well, you've done it. What's next? Yeah. What should I be doing to sort of really make my way into this new industry? And even they didn't really have sort of any kind of rock solid advice, any sort of actionable advice that I could run with straight away.
Yeah. The day I was told I got into VCA was like huge for me. And at the time I naively believed, you know, everything's going to like go totally smoothly from here. You know,
totally,
everything's locked in. I'm sorted. You know, this is going to make me like, you know, totally in demand. And that, you know, obviously didn't happen. And so one of the reasons I thought this would be a great topic for you and I to talk about, Damo, is that I have this very clear memory of when we were sort of near the end of our masters and we'd all been out having drinks with the rest of our cohort. And you and I happened to be on the same tram heading back in the same direction, or the same train heading back, back home after that night. And I remember us just sort of talking about how, like, at the time I was struggling with a lot of insecurity about what the hell do I do now? And I kind of thought I was the only one struggling with that. And I remember sort of bringing it up to you on that train and being a little bit inebriated. And then you sort of articulating that you felt the same way. And it was like, it was actually really comforting to kind of be like, oh man, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only person who has no idea what to do now.
And this is the thing I think with this, with the creative industries, everyone, we're so taught to fake it till you make it. So everyone is doing that all the time. So it is actually, it's really hard to sort of break through that shell of, I kind of don't know what I'm doing and I'm kind of making it up as I go along and I kind of don't know what my next 3, 4, 5 steps are. I'm really just working one at a time. And because of that, it is, as you said before, it's quite hard to get some real sort of nice advice on steps that you can take that, that could lead anywhere. Like, obviously, it's a tricky industry. There is no one right path, but there are definitely things you can do to help yourself and create better chances that you're going to sort of either meet the right people or get attached to a project that you're really excited about. And I think, yeah, same thing during that. I remember that train ride very well as well. And I had the same thought because I was like looking at you. I knew you obviously had a few plays under your belt that had been produced. And I was kind of thinking, oh, well, this guy knows what he's doing, you know. And no. So to have you say the same thing is... It was a comfort because I was already feeling like, oh, it's just me in this boat of, damn, what do I do now? But it wasn't. It's all of us. And I think there's so many emerging writers out there who are in the exact same boat.
And it's been really fascinating, I think, since we finished our masters to kind of watch the disparate paths that everyone has sort of taken.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because people have gone down different roads. I mean, you and I both went down the podcasting route for a while there, you know. But we also had people who now work in production, people who have now sort of climbed the ranks of different production companies in Melbourne. So there's quite a few people who have moved away from screenwriting but used the course and the contacts and the connections to move into other roles in the industry, which you know, is one of the paths that you can take.
Yep.
But if you really just want to follow the path of writing for a living, like, how do you do that? And one of the biggest things that I think I've learned in the years since we wrapped our masters is that you can't take anything for granted. I found out the morning after that train ride that I'd been shortlisted for this international screenwriting competition, later on I went on to win. And I remember at the time, you know, that was one of the best moments of my life. Like, getting that email saying that I'd been shortlisted right at what might have been one of my lowest ebbs professionally and creatively, just having no clue where to go next. And so getting that email was like a bit of a lifeline. And then finding out that I'd won a couple of months later really just like it totally kind of pulled me out of the water at the moment where I was the closest to drowning. But the follow-on to that is, and I remember very well, like, sitting with my housemate that night out on the deck of the house I was in at the time, having a glass of wine and just being like, and him, so, and me telling him all about the award and what it potentially represented and what it meant, and him saying to me, oh, so you're set. You're set now, right?
Yeah,
like, you're locked into a career, you know, this is the foot in the door that you needed. And I didn't agree with him, but privately, I was thinking, I'm set. I'm like, you know, I'm going to the Emmys. I'm gonna do so well.
Yeah.
And then nothing came of it. Like, or not nothing, but very little came of it. Like, I went over to America. I had this wild whirlwind weekend at the International Emmys. I went to LA afterwards and like took meetings with like some big production companies. And I came back absolutely convinced that I was about to blow up.
Yeah.
None of those conversations came to anything.
Yeah.
They all just sort of quietly dripped away.
You know what I really love about that is it even plays like a three-act structure where you're at your lowest point, the email came in the form of a glimmer of hope, you winning the award is like, oh, that's our resolution.
Yep.
Except, no, this is only the midpoint.
Yeah.
We're only halfway through the story at this point. So, yeah, I really love that because even with a big... And, like, that's a big award. It was the Emmys. Like, that still isn't a guarantee that everyone's just going to show up at your door knocking and saying, yeah, great, we want you. You know, it doesn't work that way.
And that's the thing. It's like that's kind of why, you know, more recently I've had some other sort of really exciting career progressions. Mm. And my agent said to me at one point, she was like, you know, you don't, with all of this stuff happening, you know, you don't seem to be too kind of excited or over the moon or anything. I'm like, no, I am.
Yeah.
I just know that nothing has happened until it's happened.
Yeah.
Like, I've made the mistake before of assuming that just because things look exciting in a certain area, things are going to be exciting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious from your end, Damo, like, have you had any of those experiences since you finished at VCA? Have you had anything that you thought was really going to take off that then didn't? Have you had things that surprised you, you know, things that came along that you didn't necessarily think were going to be this life-changing thing and then were? Just interested.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I think anytime you get your first sort of glimmer of work, especially paid work, the confidence boost that comes from that is huge. You're like, okay, now we're moving. Now the train is moving forward sort of thing. So there was a few early ones where some of the local screen agencies in Australia have regular competitions. And so I was shortlisted for about... There was three different awards I got shortlisted for in pretty quick succession. So I'm like, oh, here we go. Now, clearly, whatever, you know, I've been writing enough to I'm getting to a point where my work's getting noticed. So I kind of was thinking from that point, this is it. You know, okay, cool. When should I quit my day job, basically, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Not having even won the awards already, I was like, you know, seeing my name in lights. And then another time would be sort of my first experience in a writer's room where, you know, it's a very exciting experience. You're with all these other awesome screenwriters. A lot of them are, if it's a good writer's room, there's varying levels of sort of experience. And some of the guys I was working with were super experienced and it was a comedy project, so they were super funny guys. And I'm like, great, this is all I ever wanted. Like, the idea of the writer's room was everything, was really what got me in, what made me want to do the master's in the first place, is just sitting around with a bunch of like-minded people creating awesome stories and being funny. Like, that's all I ever wanted. So those first couple of days in the writer's room, I was like, this is great. But anyone who's been in a writer's room knows basically, well, yeah, you get a couple of days and then that's kind of it. You go off, you work on your project. And for this one, this was a project that... it was just development, so it wasn't actually, hadn't gone to series or anything like that. So that was as far as it got. It never really got any further. I got to contribute to the development of it and had a good couple of days and then nothing. And then nothing for quite a long time after that until, as we'll get into later, sort of a few of our mates that we did the course with, they were working on their careers, so they needed extra writers because they basically were developing projects. And it really... came from that my next sort of step further in my career came. But there was a huge break in between where I just had nothing and I was sort of, yeah, just working my day job, tinkering away at my own writing with no real output for it.
And did you ever, I mean, in a sec, I think we should probably delve a little bit into VCA and I think into the value of education in the arts, because for some people it is a contentious issue. Like, there are some people who just, you know, completely sort of look down their nose at, you know, any kind of writing course or for any sure. kind of course that purports to teach a creative art, which according to some people is something that should just be, you know, should just stem naturally. But we'll get into all that in a sec. I wonder, and let just to get a little bit personal for a second here, like in that time of like working your day job, having the years kind of slip away since your education finished, did you ever have like real, did you ever come up against any like breaking points, you know, any points of like real frustration where you just sat there and were like, why the hell am I still here? Because I full disclosure, I absolutely did.
Yeah.
Like I had moments of like working my day job, you know, a year or two after I'd been to the Emmys and sitting there like dealing with customers and just thinking, why am I here?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like it feels like in retrospect, it feels so arrogant because, you know, you don't, nobody owes you anything in this industry. And just because you've done the work in a creative pursuit doesn't mean you've inherently earned the right to suddenly be a successful in-demand screenwriter or any kind of writer.
For sure.
But I definitely had moments where I just sat there and thought, I've done everything. I've done everything I should have done and nothing's come of it. And where, like, why am I here? And to the point where, you know, I was getting like angry and frustrated at these poor customers who were just there trying to, like, you know, buy buy the products that I was being paid to sell them.
Yeah.
But did you ever have any of those moments?
Well, I did. Well, it's interesting. So you actually made me think of this moment not long after the course was done, where it was in summer and I remember being in a friend's parents' swimming pool, Nikki, and she asked me, she's like, oh, so like, how long are you going to give yourself in this writing career? Because my background is
a difficult question, isn't it?
It's such a difficult question. And my background was originally, I did my bachelor's in science and then sort of worked in that field for a couple of years and found I was just wanting more. So I wanted to be creative, wanted to be a writer, hence getting, doing the master's course. And it was a good question to ask because it wasn't one I'd asked myself. And I actually just answered very organically. Well, I was kind of like, well, forever, like I'll just keep going. And I don't think she even realizes the impact that question had on me, because regularly I've thought back to that moment and thought, yeah, well, I just got to keep going. Like there's no stopping to it. Like there's no, any benchmark you create for yourself is really just that. It's a creation. It doesn't mean anything. The most important part is just to keep writing and keep putting stuff out there. But to answer your question, definitely, especially with the day job side of things. So for a while after our course, I was just working part-time because I wanted to give myself lots of time for writing, and then wasn't having any wins to the point where I was just like, well, I need money more than I need time to write at this point.
Yeah.
As well as I found myself getting so demoralized, I wasn't using that free time to write anyway. So then I ended up taking a full-time job, which left me with really very little writing time. And so during that period, it was a double-edged sword where having less writing time meant I was much more precious when I got it and I actually used it. So that was great. But then once I started using it and I could see my writing improving, then I'm like, well, no, this is what I want to be doing. Why am I working full time? And then it was, yeah, there was times where I'd be going in 5 days a week just thinking, no, I don't want to be here. And I often write in the morning. I get up quite early and I do writing before work. And so I'd be getting into this story and I might be like 300-400 words in if I'm lucky. And then, oh shit, I got to get ready for work. Like it was the most demoralizing.
Yeah.
And it would happen every morning where I'm like, no, but this is what I want to be doing. I don't want to go off and do this stupid job. So for sure, so many times I've, you're just sort of kicking yourself or you're just like, when is the next win coming? Like you kind of really just, you're almost fooling yourself into saying, well, it has to come at some point. If I just keep persisting, I will get there. And there's no guarantee, like you said, but I don't know. I do feel like persistence is the main ingredient.
Well, it's so funny you say that because I don't know, I relate to that way too much in terms of, you know, real life impinging on your, you know, your time to be creative. Mm. Because when I used to work the sales job, it was the kind of job where, you know, I was selling, well, I mean, I was selling fireplaces, like I was selling wood heaters. And, you know, people don't really come to a wood heater store unless they're looking to buy a wood heater. You know, people don't just come in and casually browse.
Yeah,
so it was
exactly.
The kind of job where, you know, you might just get a couple of customers a day. But, you know, the customers usually would buy something or usually would be starting the conversation to buy something down the line. So
right.
It was one of those jobs that was like quite, in the grand scheme of things, it was quite cushy, you know, all things considered. And I had a lot of time when I wasn't, you know, at the back, like chopping wood and cleaning the heaters and doing maintenance stuff. I was taking time to write.
Yeah.
And so I would sit in there and I would just write. And often I would have big kind of long stretches of uninterrupted writing time on company money. And then I would have moments where I'd be in the middle of writing something I was really excited by and customers would walk in and I would be so irrationally resentful towards them because I'm like, don't you see that you're interrupting something important here? Whereas obviously, like, you know, them buying this thing is what's like paying for me being here,
right.
And like paying
my
bills and everything. But it was that. And I don't know, I think in retrospect, like now that I've kind of reached a place in my career where writing is my full-time job and it is my only source of income, I there's part of me that almost misses that a little bit.
Sure.
Like I miss kind of sort of, and that's crazy in and of itself, because obviously what we all aspire to is to be in a position where we can just write. But there was just something about, like, you know, really treasuring those stolen moments to sort of sit down and just like get as much out as possible and to get frustrated at real life, but to, you know, to be, you know, talking to a customer or going to work and all you can think about is your story.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was just something about that when it, like, I guess it was, even though it was obviously in a sensible career, it was in a lot of ways, in terms of its real impact on my life back then, a hobby.
Yeah.
But so let's kind of step back in time a little bit and look at our time at VCA, because it's probably a question a lot of up and coming writers ask is like, should I go and study it?
For sure.
And for me personally, I came out of high school pretty much set on being a writer. That was what I wanted to do. That was what I wanted to study. I had like a brief flirtation with pursuing acting, and then I realized I couldn't act. And so I was like, all right, writing's going to be it.
Yeah.
And I really despised my undergrad. Like, I thought it was just so pointless, partly because a Bachelor of Arts, you know, you have to populate your, I guess, your curriculum or your coursework with a lot of classes that aren't necessarily writing related. Mm-hmm. But then even the writing classes that I did do, I found immensely frustrating. Like, I know I've told this story before, but I remember being in this one class. It was like a playwriting class. Mm-hmm. And every single week the tutor would just bring in a Samuel Beckett play or an excerpt from a Samuel Beckett play. You know, Samuel Beckett, who wrote Waiting for Godot and Endgame and all kinds of like absurdist plays that are very highly revered now. Mm-hmm. And it's just not my thing. Like, absurdism isn't really my thing. I don't enjoy Beckett. I've never understood Beckett. Mm-hmm. It's not the kind of thing I really invest in or connect to. And it wasn't the kind of thing I wanted to write.
Yeah.
But basically every week the course would amount to imitate Samuel Beckett.
Right.
And it got to the point where I put up my hand in one of the classes and I was like, are we going to do anything except imitate Samuel Beckett? And like, normally I wouldn't be that forthright or that rude, but like I was younger and I was annoyed and I already hated Melbourne Uni being like, I had this, you know, this furious childish resentment towards it. And the tutor just looked at me like I was an idiot and was like, yeah, but this is good writing.
Oh boy.
And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to write like this.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, but this is good writing. And she was almost confused that I would even ask the question. And I think I had this, like, this weird frustration where I felt like a lot of those courses were telling us what to write and how to write and saying, this is the benchmark that you have to try to achieve. These are the writers that we think you should be working towards. Whereas I guess, like, in a lot of ways, my taste was always kind of more commercial. And then, so when we got to VCA, like, I was, apart from the fact that it was totally focused just on writing, I liked the fact that they did definitely strive to pair us with tutors who understood our sensibilities, and because it was a folio-based thing in terms of getting into that master's, you know, it was, we were already all there for a reason. Yeah. We were already all there because people had looked at our work and said, okay, there's something there. And I do appreciate the fact that, for me at least, I felt that VCA wasn't about telling us how to write. It was about saying, let's take what you've got and let's work with you to become better at it. Let's work with you to identify the tools that can help you hone your craft. And so from your end, how did you feel about it? Did you think it was helpful in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, for me, 100%. So I had a science background. So I really actually had not done a ton of writing. I'd always been a big reader and I loved my television and I'd sort of dabbled with a few bits of writing, but the reality was I hadn't written a lot. So for me, I was approaching it very much as, well, I want to learn how to write. I want to know how to do this thing well. And it was basically like, I'm someone who really wants to know how to do every part of it before I even start. I'm not great at just sort of jumping off and figuring it out as I go. I really want to know it all. So for me, going into the VCA course was perfect. It was everything. Like, it really, obviously I had enough skill that I got in, and there was sort of a bit of presumed knowledge already. Obviously need to be at least very familiar with screenwriting format and sort of have read a bunch of scripts and know what you're doing. But from there, it really introduced a lot of, or a lot of the different skills sort of can use to just improve your writing. But I think that's the key point, is that it's improving your writing, where other sort of either books I'd read or little short courses I had done, I agree, I kind of found that they really wanted to put you in a very well-defined box. And that box doesn't suit everybody. You know, you've got to be in your box. Like, it needs to represent you. So for me, VCA was really great. It definitely taught me, it gave me the grounding, really. It's an ongoing education, I've found. Like, I've definitely done further self-taught education and read a whole bunch of different stuff and some amazing video essays. Like, the internet is full of great advice if you're willing to sort of dig through and find it. So for me, it was really great. It basically gave me the beginning skills that I needed, and it really just reinforced, you can write.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Like, it really was like, until then I was like, I think I know I like this. I think I'm okay at it. But at least leaving, I was like, no, I can do this. I've still got to, you know, still got work to do. But it really gave me that grounding. The only thing it didn't do was, as we said before, was really sort of introduce how do I break into this industry. So with writing skills, it was wonderful. But then for that industry side of it, I found it a bit lacking.
It's funny because like my relationship with VCA, and it's also really funny to hear you say that like pre-VCA you hadn't really done too much writing, because I always think I envied a little bit like even from VCA onwards, like you had a very, very clear voice from day one. You know, I think you've always had a very clear and distinct kind of authorial voice. I don't know if that's the right. Anyway, it's kind of surprising to me to hear it, because I don't think I knew that like pre-VCA you weren't writing a whole amount, or maybe we spoke about it at some point. But yeah, so obviously, you know, you were like right for it, and it's like it's paid off. But
yeah,
see, it's funny because my relationship with VCA was a bit more complex, because, and I think that in sort of an opposite way to what you're talking about, I went into VCA very arrogant. I went into it having already written a lot of plays, having already had quite a few things produced, mainly through youth and independent theatre. I'd self-published a book at that point. You know, I basically went into it with a pretty clear sense, or in my head anyway, a pretty clear sense of what my voice and my style and my interests were, and a pretty clear idea of what my process was. The problem was, because I'd spent all of my undergrad ignoring any techniques that anyone tried to teach me, there was nothing I really took away from my undergrad. I'd also learnt a lot of bad habits.
Right.
And that's not to say that education is entirely necessary. There are people who just have a very natural instinct for story, and they don't need to kind of go and study for years to get really good at it. You look at Martin McDonagh, who basically just watched a lot of movies, and then within a year from him deciding to start writing plays, he was the first playwright since Shakespeare to have four plays running on the West End simultaneously. You know, there are freaks like that out there. I'm not one of them. And I found VCA very confronting, because from day one, the stuff we were being taught was so at odds with how I had written up until that point. You know, the idea of focusing on structure and making it like as tight as possible, the idea of foregrounding theme, the idea of really interrogating what your story is about, the idea of really thinking about audience, things that in retrospect seem really obvious. But at the time, because I hadn't thought about them before, I was confronted by that. I was scared, because suddenly I was forced to think, have I been doing this wrong the whole time?
Right.
And so I then went through quite a long period of almost like trying to like resist what they were teaching me, or trying to, you know, dismiss or diminish any of the things that VCA was teaching me, and getting to a point of almost being like, no, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, like I'm a real writer, I'm a real artist. And it was because I didn't want to face up to the fact that maybe I've been going down the wrong path, and maybe I had more to learn than I cared to admit, which in retrospect begs the question of why the hell I went to VCA if I thought I was that good, because I obviously wasn't. But so obviously on some level I knew I had something to learn, and on some level I knew I would, benefit from it. But I think because I was, for so long, I was maybe the only person in my social group who did write, because I didn't really know any other writers, I had that really awful, you know, late teens, early 20s conviction that I was somehow special, and that I would go to VCA and wow everyone with how brilliant I was. And then suddenly I was there being confronted with the fact that there were much better writers than me there. Right. And there were people who, you know, who straight away were able to write things with this effortless ease that impressed everyone that I didn't seem able to do. And I felt perpetually on the back foot, and I didn't like it. But then I don't know, I think by the end of that first year at the Masters of 2014, I had a instance where a play that I wrote was rightly and absolutely savaged by critics in a way that was incredibly humbling, and really like really made me confront my shortcomings, and really made me confront the sort of, you know, oh, I'll just toss this together and it'll be fine and everybody will tell me I'm brilliant approach that I'd up until that point had. And so I definitely came into the last 6 months in early 2015 of VCA chastened and a lot more humbled and a lot more willing to kind of listen. And almost accidentally I started looking at the things that I was writing around that time, and I was like, oh my God, this is so much better. And so I think even though I'd been actively or consciously trying to reject the things VCA were teaching me, they were sinking in and they were having an impact. And so while I agree that I was frustrated that there wasn't more advice about breaking into the industry, I absolutely credit my time at VCA with the career advancements that I've been able to have since. And I 100% credit with making me a better writer.
Yeah, 100%. And so, well, the next thing I want to ask you is, so obviously we've talked about where you've come from, For those who don't know, Gabe has a book. Well, it's technically out in ebook already, and it's coming out in real. What's the term I'm trying to think of?
in real, yeah. Let's go with that. Physically, yeah.
It's coming out physically very, very soon, and it's got a lot of awesome hype around it. Well deserved. So, what were the steps between leaving VCA, our train ride, to where you are now?
I'm reminded of the song One Step Forward, Two Steps Back, that kind of, you know, plays in my head when I think about the 5-year career trajectory between then and now, because that was it, you know, like I was fortunate enough to win the Peter Ustinov Award, and don't get me wrong, like I said before, you know, nothing came of that, and that's probably more dismissive than I mean it to be, because it's not that nothing came of that, a huge amount came of that, but it wasn't necessarily in terms of tangible career progression. What that award did was that it gave me confidence.
Yeah.
It gave me a conviction that I previously, it undermined the insecurity I previously had that I was just a bad writer on some level that I sure. was harboring. And I think every writer harbors that. It kind of gave me something to point towards, you know, like one of our co-students, I guess, at VCA described it as like the gold stamp that will help your career from now on. Because, you know, at the head of any bio, I could put that, you know, it was a prestigious award and I could put that front and center.
Great call.
The other thing that was, you know, that really did kind of keep my head above water for a few years there was the podcast that we were both on, Movie Maintenance. And, you know, Movie Maintenance gave me like my first taste of what it was to have an audience who liked your work. And look, I have, in retrospect, you know, I've got very mixed feelings about Movie Maintenance. You know, for those who don't know, it was a podcast that basically was predicated on the idea that we would fix bad movies. We would say, this sucked, how do we make it better? And then we would pitch a better version. And in retrospect, the idea of all of us as, like, you know, creatives with nothing to our name, sort of, you know, trying to tell working creatives this is how you do it better was, like, ridiculously arrogant, you know? So on the one hand, I'm like, it was a very special time in my life. I'm proud of a lot of what we did on that show. There's other stuff I'm less proud of, but ultimately, you know, it gave me a platform, it gave me an audience, and it meant that, like, you know, there was a small sort of fan base out there for my work that I could sort of build on a little bit for future projects. So that did kind of keep my head above water for a while, but, you know, it was also never the end game. You know, podcasting was never where I wanted to be long-term. I wanted to be a novelist. Yeah. And I also had 3 YA books that were published in that time by a very small print publisher. And while, I mean, that probably sounds like a sort of a weird thing to throw in now and say, oh, I also had these 3 books published. Like, it wasn't as big as I guess you would think, because it was a very small print publisher. It was a first time publisher who was actually a friend of mine who came to me, and she wanted to move into publishing, and she offered to publish the Boone Shepherd, my YA novel. And she did, and she did a great job, and she invested a lot of time and money into making it as good as possible. The first book was shortlisted for the Readings Young Adult Prize, which was huge. Thanks to the podcast, it got quite a big audience, like a bigger audience than I think it would have gotten otherwise. But I mean, even that again comes back to that same thing of not taking anything for granted. So, you know, there were a lot of those kind of things bubbling along, but nothing that ever, you know, really took me from genuinely believing I was emerging into being a professional writer. And so the Hunted came about. It was a short story that I'd written when we actually, the cast of Movie Maintenance, wrote an anthology of horror short stories that we self-published in conjunction with the podcast. And the short story I wrote, I was really interested in expanding. So I kind of toyed with that for a while. And then not long after Movie Maintenance ended, I did do it. I wrote it as a novel. I expanded the whole thing, and I sent it off to my now agent. And the only real reason that I was in a position where I could do that was because she had been introduced to me by one of our mutual friends from VCA. And this sort of speaks to what I'm going to come back to as, like, the biggest, most useful thing about breaking into the industry, which is, like, the people you know and the relationships that you forge. Yeah. But Dan Nixon, who we studied with at VCA, he'd introduced me to Tara Wynn, my now agent. I'd sent her a couple of books that she was like, oh, good, but not quite. And the door was always kept a little bit open. Yeah. But I really had the sense with The Hunted that I was like, this will be my last chance. Right. Like, I sent her 2 previous books, one of which I'd sent her twice after I reworked it. She'd never sort of taken any of those. And I sat there with The Hunted and I just thought, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to send her this, and it's so different, but look, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. And after that, it was astounding how quickly things kind of happened. Mm. I guess the thing that, and I said this in another interview that I did last night, actually, like, it kind of, I think, was a war of attrition, you know? Mm. Like, it was just nonstop saying yes to as many opportunities as possible, working quietly in the background. I did a lot of freelance work via, like, Upwork and stuff because I sort of got to a point where I was like, I would rather make my money writing, even if it's not writing what I want to be writing, than working in sales. So, you know, I did a lot of, you know, I wrote like romance novellas and things for Upwork and I hated every second of it. But, you know, I did that for not very, I'm not telling anyone where you can find those things. Like, I don't know myself because they're all published under fake names. Right, but, you know, so I did a lot of ghostwriting. I did a lot of that kind of stuff for really like a pittance in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's part of you that thinks, man, you know, like 2 years ago I was at the Emmys and now I'm writing like a erotic Amish short story, which is apparently something that, you know, has a huge, huge like audience online.
I can't believe that Venn diagram of Amish and erotic is so big. That's incredible.
It's a thing. It's absolutely a thing. You would be very, very surprised. But, you know, but I don't know. It's those are the kind of things you have to do. And like, and that was the choice that I made. And it was in, I think, early 2017 that I sort of said I was quitting my day job and I was just going to take on writing work. Mm-hmm. And that was challenging because, you know, for a long time there, I was barely keeping my head above water financially, but I was happier. You know, I was happy because everything I was doing was writing related. My income was supplemented as well by working at Melbourne Young Writers Studio, where we both still work, teaching young kids creative writing, which, you know, to me was still in the sphere of writing.
For sure.
But, you know, overall, it was just sort of working a lot of little writing jobs here and there and sort of cohering just enough of an income to get by until I managed to get to this one thing over the line. And that was all it took, you know, because when a couple of publishers turned the hunter down in the first place, Tara said to me, all it takes is one.
Yeah.
And I think that's so true of just pursuing a career in the arts in general. All it takes is that, like, that one person to say yes and that one person to say, I like this book, and then things can change.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that because that really brings us back to that persistence note.
Absolutely.
That for any wannabe writer, I mean, most writers already know that they're going to require, they're going to need a fair amount of persistence straight away. They're going to need persistence to just improve their craft. Like, you need, if you're going to do your 10,000 hours of writing, well, that's, the persistence to put in that time is already huge, let alone then taking that writing and trying to sell it to other people. Like, it really is just one of the hardest things anyone can do. But persistence is what will get you there. Because like you said, you just need that one yes from the right person and you're away. So if you persist, you're just making it so that yes can happen more.
Exactly. And like, and that's the thing, you know, I think that talent and luck both have a huge part of any kind of success in the creative fields, but persistence is the biggest one. Hmm. But so Demo, so what about your journey since VCA? Like, let's hear a bit about that.
Well, I think a lot of the same notes you've hit is sort of what's gotten me any kind of progression, which is putting stuff out there before it's ready. So like I said, I hadn't had a ton of experience writing before the course and then after the course. So I was writing a lot of scripts, or sort of like pilot scripts, so that when opportunities came, I had them ready. But
yeah,
pilot scripts or any kind of scripts are really tough. To get the right people to look at them is a pretty big ask. So I had these scripts that I was proud of, but again, I couldn't really do much other than enter them into the right competition when it came my way. So then I started doing more prose writing, some sort of short stories and that sort of thing. And originally I was entering a few comps with those, but I was also I just wanted to put some of my writing out there. You know, this was something I'd been working on for a while now. I was starting to feel like I was finding my voice and I kind of knew what kind of stories I wanted to tell. And so I just really wanted to put it out there. So I just made a website and started doing that. And not that necessarily led to anything, but again, it's just getting some nice feedback from people who have read them, even if it's just your family, like even if it's just people you know, but at least someone's reading your stuff and going, hey, I really like that, by the way, it really made me think or really made me exciting. I could really see it, whatever. So getting that really nice feedback was a great start. And then the other thing that you sort of mentioned, which is just saying yes to things.
Yeah.
So because absolutely. We're quite close with our cohort from VCA. So having that group of other writers around you who are all in the same boat, we're all sort of just trying to figure our way through this, was so useful because like the podcast is a great example where you started that with some of the other guys and then I came on a bit later, basically because you just asked. You said, hey, do you want to be on the podcast? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll say yes. You know, I've never really done podcasting before, but why not? And like you said, it was a really wonderful experience because you got feedback now from strangers saying that was great. Like your interpretation of such and such was brilliant. I would love to see that in a movie. And you're like, well, straight away, you're like, okay, so cool. I think I can do this then. If some stranger who has no reason to pay me a compliment is saying, I would love to see what you wrote as a movie, straight away you're like, great, that's kind of all I ever needed, all I really wanted. And then every sort of good thing that I've had since then has come from the twin mix of kind of who you know and saying yes to things and putting stuff out perhaps before you think it's ready and putting yourself out there before you think you're ready. And then meeting more people. Like, again, for who you know, it's really, even that is just about saying yes.
Yeah.
So when someone says, hey, do you want to come to this thing? You say yes. You go talk to people, not with any agenda, not with any sort of desire to sell them a product, just to meet them and get to know them. And then in the future, they might think of you for something or you might think of them for something. Like, it's very reciprocal, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference too, is not going into those meetings and those opportunities with that agenda, you know, mm-hmm. but just getting to know people who are like-minded, getting to know people who are interested in the same things, because down the line, you never know when that person might, exactly what you said, think mm-hmm. of you for something and say, hey, what about this?
Yeah. And I think that's really it. It's about really presenting an authentic version of you. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, one of the best things you can do is just ask them what stories they like, whether it be movies or books or what have you, because straight away you're going to find out what things you both have in common, what similarities you have in terms of taste. And so straight away you're having a conversation about the thing you're both passionate about. That's going to forge a stronger Absolutely. Bond than you going, oh, hi, I'm a writer. Here's my card. Here's what I do. Look at my website, whatever. That's not going to do anything, you know.
Absolutely.
Talk about what you like. And then later on, if they happen to get some work in that field, they might go, oh, Gabe, we were talking about this. He might be perfect for this thing, you know? And I think that while you're doing all that, the other thing to keep in mind is just to keep writing. Like, even if it's just for yourself.
Absolutely.
Even if it's, you know, so I would say write stuff, put it out there if you can in any capacity, whether it is self-publishing, whether it's putting on your own play, whether it's a web series, what have you. Like, you do yourself no harm by putting stuff out there. If anything,
Absolutely.
You're going to get feedback. Even if it's not the best thing, you're going to get people to tell you why it's not the best thing, hopefully in a nice way, but the internet's a terrible place, so maybe not. But even any kind of feedback is good feedback, because then if you keep putting stuff out, that next thing's going to be better. And then the thing after that's going to be better still.
Yeah. Kind of keeping an open mind and being willing to learn and being willing to, you know, don't be me at VCA. Don't kind of go in and just think that, you know better and that you've got nothing to learn. Because even if you disagree, listening is valuable, because it's actually a really healthy thing to hear advice or to learn lessons that you don't think you agree with. It's like getting a bad review of something. You know, you can read it and you can straight away go in and be like, I disagree with every point and I refuse to take it on board and I'm going to belittle the person who wrote it. But you'll do yourself a much bigger service if you take that feedback on board with an open mind and then decide you don't have to agree with it, but if you listen to it and are able to articulate to yourself why it's incorrect and do that in a you know, respectful, measured, thought out way that isn't a knee-jerk reaction, then you'll come out stronger. You'll come out more certain in why you're doing what you're doing. You'll come out with a clearer idea of how your work is perceived by people. And I think it's only helpful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Like once you know yourself and your own writing, then you can really start to progress and work towards a specific mountain 100%. Rather than just walking in a random direction, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, this has been an absolutely lovely conversation with friends. Thank you very much, Gabe.
No, thanks for joining me for it, Damo. And thanks again so much to the First Time Podcast for having us on. This was really,
much.
Really fun. And I hope there was something useful in this to anyone listening.
Yeah. All right. See you, everyone.
See you, guys.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons.
This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.